apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic novel, show, movie. Is it in your mind yet? Was it instant? Okay, turn to somebody beside you and just tell them what it was. What is your favorite apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic show, novel, movie? Go ahead, share it. Cool, do it. There's some zombies out there, you know, some, everyone losing their sight. Did anybody mention some of those ones, right? Was there a Mad Max, or was there a The Last of Us? Left Behind, old school, right? What do you think about in the end? When you think about the end of the apocalypse, the day of the Lord. You know, 90s Christians on TV were, now if we look back, it's pretty comical, but so many people gave a ton of money to people who were trying to interpret the times, which ended up being a lot of fear-mongering, right? Producing fear by interpreting the times, and then people donate towards causing panic. The news today, you could do the same thing, right? A lot of people still do. It's an election year in the United States, and who knows, maybe for us too. No one knows yet. But in the midst of that, right, maybe you don't know this, but it seems like every time there's a new president of the United States, the new Antichrist is here, right? The Antichrist has arrived, right? I remember very poignantly when it was Barack Obama was the Antichrist, right? And then it was Donald J. Trump, and then it just keeps going. Every single one is the Antichrist. We got to point this out. And while, yes, the scriptures speak to some sometimes frightening imagery and often more so bizarre imagery of the end times and the apocalypse, what is God getting at in the end? What is he really pushing towards for us to know in our day, in our present age? Now, we're not going to encompass all of this today, but we're going to look at what Luke is talking about in a couple of his passages in his gospel. But to start today, let's just look at the word apocalypse, which is a terrifying word that could strike fear into anyone or excite you if you're going to the movie theater in any time, is that word apocalypse, which simply means to reveal. It's not as scary anymore, is it? Revealing. And in Luke 17, verse 30, it talks about the Son of Man, apocalypse, it says, which could scare many, but it simply means the Son of Man is revealed. Very intriguing that that's what the word is. Well, I want to read today from our first passage in chapter 12, and it's simply this today. Luke chapter 12, 54 to 56. Says this. He also said to the crowds, he being Jesus, when you see a cloud rising in the west, right away you say, a storm is coming. And so it does. And when the south wind is blowing, you say, it's going to be hot. And it is. Hypocrites, you know how to interpret the appearance of the earth and the sky, but why don't you know how to interpret this present time? Interpret this present time. People today, they knew how to interpret the agrarian kind of signs that there was going to be a storm coming or a nice warm wind. And maybe you as well know this as well. I grew up in rural New Brunswick and lived in rural Alberta for quite a long time and know a bunch of the sayings that are hilarious, but all about what it's going to be like in the weather and the ages and when a storm is going to come, right? Red sky at night. I heard someone whisper it. Sailor's delight, right? And these terms, and we know how to do these. And Jesus scoffed at the people of the day. He says, you know how to interpret all these weird signs. What about the present time or the present age is what he's getting at. Can you interpret the present age? And people through history have tried to figure out what is Jesus talking about. Well, what is the present age? And why does it need interpreting? Luke 12 has a pretty interesting focus. When you read it in context, a majority of Luke 12 is Jesus talking about possessions, actually. We have a man who came who said, hey, I'm trying to split up this inheritance, but I'm having trouble here. What do we do? We have people who are worried about their clothes, their food, and their housing. Maybe that's you. And they're trying to figure out what to do. And Jesus goes on to say, to build up your treasure in heaven. And he's pretty explicit in Luke, in particular, in how to do that. You give away to the poor, to the needy, and you pay wages to your workers. This is what it was then, to focus on eternity. And he makes the switch here. He's talking about possessions, and we think possessions are everything. And then he turns this page and says this, that when you are properly focused on eternity, the end, or the apocalypse, here's what you're going to do. You're not going to hoard it for yourself. You're going to give it away to the poor and needy and pay good wages to your workers. He frames it in the terms of the master, who's given you all authority in the company or in the business or in the home, and you get to be in charge while he's away. Now, if you think the master's returning, you treat people as the master did. Maybe he was good and he was paying wages and he was helpful. But if you don't think the master's coming back, what do? Well, you do whatever you want, which, let's admit, maybe we're a little more selfish and we want to hoard a little more for ourselves, which is where the story goes for Jesus. Interpret the times then. Then this passage comes. You can interpret the storms that are coming, the warm wind, but you can't interpret the age, which he was just talking about, possessions being our number one item on our lives. Jesus then describes how he, the Son of Man, was returning, the Master, that when it was going away to come back, and how that will divide people. The question for us today, I think, is what moment are we in? What is our age? How do we interpret it? The question from the crowd that day, which is intriguing, it was from the crowd, was possessions based and not regarding the value of life. And I wonder today, and I'm curious if it's much different than it was back then. Possessions capture our heart. They capture our lives. What are we ready for? The master's return? Or do we think he's simply not coming back? Do we have a vision of the master returning or not? The focus on interpreting the time, the moment, is not just when is the end coming, but what is the condition of my being, of my behavior. That's a very important distinction that Luke canvasses through Jesus' words throughout the rest of the scriptures as well. In Luke chapter 17 is where we're going to go next. Luke 17, 20 to 37. There's going to be two questions that are posed. We went from the crowd posing a question to now the Pharisees, these teachers of the law, are going to ask a question. And then the disciples will ask a question. And they're going to go like this. When will the kingdom come and be the end of all things? The disciples in the end are going to ask, where? Where are people going to go? So I want you to catch those as we read through our passage today and Jesus' response. When he was asked by the Pharisees when the kingdom of God would come, he answered them. The kingdom of God is not coming with something observable. No one will say, see here or there. For you see, the kingdom of God is in your midst. Then he told the disciples, the days are coming when you will long to see one of the days of the Son of Man, but you won't see it. They will say to you, see there and see here. Don't follow or run after them. For as the lightning flashes from horizon to horizon, and light up the sky, so the Son of Man will be in his day. But first, it is necessary that he suffer many things and be rejected by this generation. Just as it was in the days of Noah, so will be in the days of the Son of Man. People went on eating, drinking, marrying, and being given in marriage until the day Noah boarded the ark. And the flood came and destroyed them all. It will be the same as it was in the days of Lot. People went on eating, drinking, buying, selling, planting, building. But on the day Lot left Sodom, fire and sulfur rained from heaven and destroyed them all. So it will be like that on the day of the Son of Man is revealed. that day, a man on the housetop whose belongings are in the house must not come down to get them. Likewise, the man who is in the field must not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever tries to make his life secure will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. I tell you, on the night two will be in one bed, one will be taken away and the other one left. Two women will be grinding grain together, one will be taken and one left. Where, Lord? They asked him. He said to them, where the corpse is, there also the vultures will be gathered. Pretty descriptive imagery going on here that can sometimes be quite frightful. So what's going on here? When asked of when, he said, it's actually not visible. It's not visible. It's not going to be observable, is the language. And then he gives this phrase, the kingdom of God is in your midst. Very important phrase. He says, you're not going to see because it's going to be too fast. Like lightning going from horizon to horizon. To not follow them, the people who are interpreting facts that cause fear. Say, see here and see there. You can sense the fear filling up inside of you. Don't follow those people, it says. And then he goes on, oh yeah, and the Son of Man must suffer. I've got to suffer a lot of things here as well. And Luke is pretty good at bringing us back to that moment. Instead then, he says it's going to be like the days of Noah and Lot. And here's where the imagery really comes in. Maybe you know of Noah and Lot, and maybe you don't. So let me give you a little synopsis of Noah. Noah built an ark. God said there's going to be a flood. Build an ark. Get on it. Bring your family. Bring two creatures, right, of every kind. That kind of story. You remember that? And then they got on the ark, and the flood came and destroyed the earth except for Noah and his family. And then there was Lot. Lot, maybe a little less known story, was in Sodom and Gomorrah. And in that space, God said, this town is beyond reconcilable to me. It needs to be destroyed. So I'm going to destroy it with sulfur and fire. And so he's going to do this, but there's one family who's good, and it's Lot and his family. And they leave, and the town is destroyed with sulfur and fire. But they got to leave. Now, the imagery is so striking here that it does steal our focus. But it's actually, I would argue, it's not the emphasis of what Jesus is getting at here. The emphasis is not on the mode of the end, the floods, the fire, though they're mentioned, but the emphasis is on what people are doing and their heart condition. It's not the when, but the what here. Well, let's look at what was going on then at the time. The passages say, they were going on with normal life, right? They were eating and drinking and being merry and going along in marriage, which just simply means they were doing normal life. Normal life. Work, leisure. And then we see their reaction, because all of a sudden history changed. The suddenness is what Jesus is getting at here, and their reaction to it. He says, in those days, the person on the roof who sees it happening won't have time to go down in the house to grab his possessions. The one in the field won't have time to run home to all his possessions. No, it'll happen so fast that you already need to be ready. In what ways then? If it's not possessions, if it's not building the bunker, if it's not collecting my funds to pay for the end of days, right, to have it ready to go when the apocalypse comes, then what is it? It's a condition of the heart. And to not be distracted, to have your heart on the Son of Man. That becomes the question Jesus asks here. When it happens, what will be the conditioning of our being? To react and grab possessions? Or to turn towards the Son of Man. I love that phrase. Remember Lot's wife. It's an entire verse. It begins and ends with those three words. Remember Lot's wife. Some of you are like, who's Lot's wife? Why does she matter? Well, here's the interesting story. They're being taken out of Sodom and Gomorrah, and they're running away. And as they go away, God told them, do not turn back, much like our passage here. Don't turn back. Well, guess what? She turns back. She looks and most likely is longing to be back there and seeing it destroyed. She turns to a pillar of salt. Okay, that's what happens. Dramatic imagery yet again. Remember Lot's wife. But not simply that she turned to a pillar of salt, but that her heart was not with the Lord. She turned away. Where are we? Our affections and our fear needs to be on the Lord. If we're bent on security in our possessions and in our world that we're building up for ourselves here, we will react to security away from the very being who could save us when the end finally comes. The Son of Man himself, Jesus, the Lord. Yes, it is a condition of the heart. The disciples then asked, to where? To where? Where are they going? Where are they being taken to, these ones who, there's two in a bed and one is taken away and one is left? Often, if you've been in the Christian world a little bit, you might know and think a little more dispensational and think, oh, it's the rapture, right? It's a moment when people are separated. And if you want to hear more of that, you can listen to Tim's sermon, Pastor Tim's sermon from August, where he got into detail about more of that. But for today, in context of our passage, what's going on? What is this taken away language talking about? Well, we look at our stories. Noah, right? Some people were taken away into a boat to safety, and some people were taken away to destruction. Same with Lot's. Some were taken away to safety, and some were taken away to destruction. So which is it talking about here? Where? What are the disciples actually asking about? Where? Well, Jesus actually doesn't directly answer the question, does he? He actually gives you a sign to where to look, which is poignant. Talking about looking at corpses and where vultures are gathering. So what is he talking about? Not a place, but rather the condition of our hearts, of our beings. Look at the condition of where people, of who people are. That's how you know where they end up. So what is this condition then? It's not a question of when is the end coming, or where do we go necessarily, but the what. What is the condition or are the affections of my heart? Okay, so for some reason, Tim got prayer last week and I get these two heavy passages and maybe you feel it again today. I talked about the cost of discipleship a couple weeks ago and now this. Thanks, Tim. But so let me give a little bit of a reprieve here for a moment. We're pretty hesitant to make decisions at times. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're super focused, Billy, and you just know exactly what you need and what you want in your life. Some of us, and probably many of us, are very indecisive. So much that there's a restaurant, one of my favorites, that actually has a meal called the indecisive. Okay, so you just get a little bit of everything. That's perfect for me. That's perfect. Right? The indecisive. We can scroll through whichever streaming app you want. There's so many of them, right? So you stream through the catalog, the library of Netflix, and you just keep going. And before long, it's like, I don't know what's late for you, but it's like 10:30, and you're wondering, like, what are we supposed to watch tonight? Right? And you've run out of time. It's like, okay, I'm going to bed. That's it. It's over. It's hard for us to make decisions when our heart is kind of split. Whether it be food or entertainment, whatever it could be, but it can be the very similar thing when it comes to our spiritual lives. That our hearts' affections are so divided in these days. We're inundated with things, with material things, with whatever it could be. We're just split up in our hearts. And that becomes a problem when our affections are split from Jesus to things that are temporary in particular in this world. becomes a problem. It doesn't mean we don't enjoy God-given things or the things that we can enjoy in this world, but not at the expense of our souls. Not at the expense of our souls. And in Luke 12, we were learning that possessions often do this. They war at our soul. And maybe we think we're doing pretty good, but then I need to remind us that we live in North America where it's cushy and it's good, and we're being thrown one possession thing after another, and then our house isn't good enough, so I need to make it bigger or renovate it or whatever, or I need a better car because society says this is the good car, and the junker that I drive now doesn't really work, even though I bought it 2 years ago, right? Like it's, and we just get inundated with what culture tells us is valuable and good possessions. Captures our hearts, which causes us to make some pretty rough decisions. Maybe when it comes to relationships, to the poor, the needy, to those that I'm in charge of their wages. Could be many things. The end is actually a great motivator in the end. The apocalypse or the end times, whatever it may be. It is a great motivator. In light of the coming kingdom, though, what are we motivated to? Which direction do we move? Down into the house to grab possessions? Or is it towards the Son of Man and these God-given things? Either way, it will show us the conditions of our heart. You can test it. You'll hear a passage of end times and people quoting scriptures and you can read the news today and say, look at the wars and rumors of wars. That will tell you when the end is coming, right? What is my reaction? Am I building my bunker? Gathering my possessions? Preparing for it in that way? Do I panic? The end is here. Or do I look at my heart and what I value? What's important to Jesus, the Master who's going to return, is it valuable to me as well? Are my affections with Jesus? Because then I'm good. You could look at, am I giving to the poor, releasing the heart of possession? Do I keep pointing to the kingdom? And how then it's already here? Which brings me back to that phrase Jesus mentioned. When asked by the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, when is the kingdom going to come? He didn't say it's going to be in 1989. He didn't say it's going to be in 2035. He said, the kingdom is in your midst. I love this. I love this. Midst, among you. Among you is what it means. In chapter 11, Jesus said the kingdom is here when every demon is released from someone's being. The kingdom is here. And when you see what the kingdom is like, it's every healing, it's every salvation, it's every turning to Jesus, every ounce of freedom that we find is a part of the kingdom of God. Now, in chapter 19, we learn that the kingdom is not fully here, that the Master is returning. And it will one day be full, but in some ways here today, the kingdom is breaking in and it's gaining some spiritual ground every single day. Because God is at work. Friends, God is at work in our world. We can see him everywhere. He's already here in many ways. So what do we do? What do we do with the kingdom of God in our midst? Is an infinitely more helpful question than when is he coming and where are they going when they die? What do we do if the kingdom is now here? I think we lean in, we expect, and that makes us ready. We lean into the kingdom that he talked about when Jesus stood up in the synagogue in Luke 4. We've been basing this entire series on this message of Luke 4. In Luke 4:18 and 19. when he stood up and he talked about how the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to set free the oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And he went and did that with his entire life. And he passed it on then to his disciples, who pass it on to us even here today. We expect these things. We lean into them. And this makes us ready for when it happens, when the Son of Man is finally revealed for the last time. Jesus said, "The kingdom is in your midst." When he said that, guess who was in their midst? It was Jesus himself. I'm so thankful, Ken, today that as you curated the set for today, you were providing space and you even spoke it out. We're providing space for Jesus today, for you to meet with him, to worship him. Why? Because he's here in our midst. He's here in our midst. This is, in some ways, already the apocalypse then. That the Son of Man is revealed to us in this place. So let this motivate us then. Let's lean into Jesus, who he is, and what he's up to. Let the end motivate us to lean into him and his kingdom mission. So in the end today, what is the condition of your heart? Where are you at? We've only got about 5 or so minutes left here today. So I wanted to create some space. So worship team, you can come on up. As we do a bit of a prayer response, and you can Google this. I want you to Google this later. The prayer of examine, which is a really helpful, frequent experience you can do. There's an app called Examine as well that's really helpful. There's probably many, I don't know. But the prayer is this, that God, you show me my heart. You show me my heart. And I encourage you to do that one. But today, what I want to do is to recognize that all of us need a reorientation of our hearts. Every single one of us. We need to be brought back daily, some of us maybe hourly, back to the Lord. So my prayer is this today. I want you to pray this, actually. God, would you reorient our hearts, my heart, Lord? Which means then this, God, give us a vision of your kingdom. You read about it. We've been preaching about it, but Lord, give me a vision. I can't give that to you. That needs to be Jesus. And thirdly, draw us to yourself. Draw me to yourself, Jesus. Let's have a reorientation today with Jesus as the instructor coming to us and drawing us back to himself. So, let me give you space then to meet with him, to pray this for the next few minutes. And then the worship team will lead us in our response song here after a few minutes.